Welcome. This is Naturalizing the Language of NVC with Mickey Cashton, Session 6.
Welcome back, everyone. I am so thrilled by the journey that we've been on together. Before starting with the material for today, I would like to, as usual, hear any kind of questions, comments, refinements, insights, success stories, attempts that didn't work out, anything from the past week that anybody wants to share.
I had a real great experience today with my 14-year-old daughter. We were talking about a trip she was going to be taking with a friend of hers, and I said the phrase to her, "I bet you would like to get some reassurance about whether or not your friend is going to enjoy going on this trip with you." And she says to me, "No, not at all. I just need to know whether or not she's into going." And I said, "Great, thank you for that." And I told her that I was taking this class about naturalizing nonviolent communication. And she goes, "Well, you certainly can use it." And so I was really, and then I was really great because I further got to talk to her and asked her if she would be my partner in alerting me to when I was using nonviolent communication about ways that it didn't sound natural to her. And so she agreed that she would let me know when it didn't sound natural or what she could relate to. And I was really grateful to have a partner that I can practice with here in my own house.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So she's like, "No, I don't need any reassurance. I just need to know whether or not she's into going." I thought, well, that's a very natural way to put all that lengthy stuff that I just said.
Yes.
It was great. It was awesome. And I appreciated her feedback, and I appreciate having a new partner who will alert me to when it doesn't sound natural.
Yes. And you can only have that partner because you are willing to learn from her. And that willingness to learn from her is gold in terms
yes.
of the trust between you. Because in saying, "Please alert me, I want you to be my partner," the underlying message is your opinion matters.
Yes.
And that's key to her having more trust. Delighted to hear this. Thank you for this little story.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
This is still a work in progress, but I've made progress around a difficulty I've had from time to time in expressing empathy where someone is sharing, say, very bad news or some anguish or a big upset. And my habit that I try to constrain, but it shows up, is to say something like, "Oh, that's terrible," or "How horrible." Mm-hmm. And not wanting to say that has often led me to be silent, looking for the alternative, rather than, as I'm learning in the class, to just stay present and available to be moved and trusting that some words will come up.
Yes.
So this non-empathic silence that went on with this person who had really difficult news, later she came to me and she said, "You know, I got much more compassion or empathy from a friend who said to me, 'Oh, that's so horrible.'" So there was this irony that a friend said the words that I wouldn't let myself say, but
yeah.
nor could I connect with her sincerely. So I've been working with that. What I see somebody shared last class that gave me some words that really fit my experience, which is, "I feel really horrified to hear this news with you, and my heart aches for you." Somebody said those words in a sharing that really did fit, but they just weren't available to me at the moment.
This actually is a bridge to the topic that is our topic for today. So I actually want you to use your story, because it's an excellent, simple story, to use it to illustrate some points. That is taking us into today's topic. Let's focus in on this beginning for today's topic. My first question to you is, why do you not want to say, "Oh, that's horrible"? Can you really articulate to yourself why you don't want to say that?
it's being driven by a rule.
What's the rule? Name the rule.
The rule is expressing a judgment that it, the circumstance, is horrible. Variation on that that challenges me when somebody, again, is going through a lot of stress, and I want to say that sounds really challenging rather than own my experience of being moved with different language.
So let's slow way down, because what's important to me is that you make the choice about the words that you're going to say or not say based on your connection with yourself, your connection with the other person, and your understanding of the effect that you want to create. If you base your choice of words on a rule, you're going to get the feedback that you got from your friend. You're not connecting with me. Somebody else connected much more. They just said these simple words. What's the matter with you? Why can't you say them? And so I really, really want you to relax into the possibility of saying, oh, that's awful, and to let yourself say that. Not think of it as something wrong. That's when you lose it, is when you start thinking of whatever it is that you say as wrong. You lose it.
Yes.
So I want to ask you and anyone else, I really want to shake up any notions that we have about correct responses. I want to hear from you and anyone else that wants to speak three reasons why it might be the most wonderful thing that you could possibly do to say, oh, that's awful. Can you think of at least one? Forget about this particular friend, a context, a situation, relationship, or something that would make that the thing to say and would be fine, and you could understand why it would contribute. I want you to release the idea that it's wrong by finding reasons why you might want to say that in certain circumstances. Can you think of at least one? I really want to take another moment to wrestle with this so that you can release the rigidity. Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah.
It's not like I'm saying this is the most wonderful thing. Why don't you say it? Say it all the time. It's that saying, oh, I'm never going to go there, even if it costs connection.
Yeah. Any situation where I can imagine saying that to myself, where I can really jump into that reality very, very readily and feel the distress and feel the anguish in the words that go with it is, oh, that's dreadful, or that's horrible.
So one reason to say it that you can see is if those are the words that express your authentic heart response.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Okay, let's see if we have other reasons to hear from other people. You have a different reason?
I don't know if it's really different. It seems very real and sincere. And to say, it's just like a synonym for saying something much longer and more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's shorthand.
Okay, so there's ease and simplicity in it. It is a little bit of a different aspect. Thank you for bringing it. There's ease and simplicity in it for the person saying it and for the person hearing it. Remember that life is not a practice group. Really, life is not a practice group. In a practice group, you sweat and work hard to learn different ways of speaking so that you can integrate them and make them natural. In the context of life, easy and simple, especially when someone is in distress, is valuable. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if there are more reasons.
For me, it just matches that word. It's awful. That expression matches the intensity of the feeling of the other of what's going on for the other person.
Okay. So matching that intensity has a way of giving the person a sense of being understood. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
I'd like to add to that one more twist, which is in some situations, especially if somebody is toning down, you know, they're telling you something, you know, like really difficult, challenging, something that happened to them, and they disparage themselves or say, I don't know why I'm reacting so strongly, it's not such a big deal, you know, whatever. Saying those words because they are familiar in the culture can give that other person a kind of like a reality check to take their experience seriously. I'm done extolling these words because, by and large, I totally also understand why you would want to find a different way of responding.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want you to drop it like a hot potato because I want it to be an option available to all of us to use when that's the authentic thing, when we remember that life is not a practice group, when we imagine that that might be useful for the other person to hear, when it creates ease and simplicity and we're not going to sound weird to another person. All of these things could be compelling reasons. So far, so good?
Yes.
I want to move to an entirely different part, so I want to see if anybody has any further comments or questions on just this piece.
The message that I'm getting is that to make a judgment is something we generally try to avoid. It's not a way of connecting often, and it's not the best way to give empathy. But on the other hand, I had the experience myself as a parent. I want to give empathy as a parent, but there are times when I choose to say, that's not okay. That's a judgment. And I think it's okay to say, that's not okay, and then take away the electronic device or whatever I feel is my job as a parent.
That's an entirely different topic. Entirely different topic than what we're talking about. What we're talking about right now is not about whether or not to use judgments. It's about how to express to another person our heartfelt, empathic understanding of their experience. Only that's
okay.
What we're talking about. We're not talking about judgments in general. I'm happy to come back to what you're saying and to offer you possibly a different way of saying it. It's not the topic that I'm focusing on right now. Hold on to this and please pester me if class ended and we didn't get there. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks. The next thing that I want to say is to go back to before the words, before we choose the words. I have been thinking a lot about empathy, and I kind of have a sense that and what I'm about to say is the first time that I'm saying it. These thoughts just crystallize in me. That it's not exactly a sequence, but it's almost like there are five phases or manifestations or forms that empathy can take. One of which is the root, and all the others are different external variations. The root is empathic presence. If you forget everything else in life and you remember to focus on empathic presence when you're talking with other people, it will change your relationships. What do I mean by empathic presence? Is to lend my heart, my body, my senses, my imagination, my mind, everything to another person speaking or being, and just present no obstacle to taking in their experience. It's just presence. I may not even understand a word they're saying. They may be speaking in a different language. I can still offer empathic presence. Makes sense, Elizabeth?
Yes.
I really appreciated earlier when you said non-empathic silence, because that's the absence of empathic presence. Mm-hmm. You know how, for example, if you're speaking and somebody else is with you, they're not saying anything. Sometimes it's the most wonderful thing in the world, because in a nonverbal way, you sense that they're with you. And other times they're not saying anything and you go, what's going on? Where are you? Are you listening to me?
Yep.
You know that difference? That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a mystery to me. I have a sense that if we collectively as a species manage to go around this very sharp edge corner that we're living in these days and make it and survive for another while, that one day we will learn how to have language and capacity to observe and describe nonverbal, non-material phenomena. Right now we don't have that language. I don't know how I can tell when I look at someone whether they're listening to me or not. I know there is a high correlation between if I'm listening to someone else and if they experience me as listening to them. It's not 100% perfect. High correlation. So your friend could tell that rather than listening to her, you were busy thinking about which words to say.
Yep.
So that's the key and the foundation. Then there are, I have come to see four different ways that, again, they're not like a sequence, so I don't know exactly how to relate them to each other. Like I said, we can offer empathic presence without understanding. We can also offer empathic understanding without words. So it's a very subtle difference. I can just be present with you and listen to you and not even understand anything, and you still get my sense of empathic presence. If I also understand your experience, even if I don't say anything, my intuitive sense is that it enhances your experience of being listened to. So you get some benefit if I listen without understanding, if I offer my empathic presence. You get more benefit, I believe, if I also am able to understand what your experience is. Then there is empathic reflection, which we practice. The classical form of it that we practice in NVC is, are you feeling because you need? That's not the only way to offer empathic reflection. There are many ways to offer empathic reflections. This is the NVC way. The key to empathic reflection is that I am verbalizing words that communicate my understanding of the other person's experience. In some ways, saying, oh, that's awful, falls in that category. Not exactly, but in some ways. The reason it's not exactly is because I am really talking in part about me, not really just about the other person. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
I am sharing my reaction. And that is something that I call empathic expression. So empathic reflection is more about the other person's experience. It's like, whatever the bad news is, like, it could be many ways, but the kind of like natural sounding would be, it sounds like this is a really huge loss for you. I'm just making it up. I don't really want to hear the details, but you understand where I'm going.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's a huge loss for you. That you've worked all your life to build this relationship, and now it's gone, and it's a huge loss. Is that true? That's a simple way of reflecting. Doesn't have anything to do with NVC per se. Empathic expression is talking about me. It's like, I'm really moved to hear this, or, I myself, I can really sense in my body the effect that this news has had on you, and I really feel for you. Whatever, it's my experience, and it's an empathic expression of me in the service of you, which is very different from my expression of me in the service of me wanting to be heard for my experience of hearing you. You get the difference?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I also want to name one other piece, which is something that I would call empathic action. And often enough, when people talk about empathy, that's what they mean. It's kind of like doing something to support the other person. You know, like, okay, the person talks to you about whatever they lost the relationship, and you say, whatever it is that you're going through, it sounds like you need a place to stay. Why don't you come stay at my place? It's the action that responds to the needs, not just being with the needs. In a lot of literature, people include that in empathy, and I want us to understand the scope of what empathy means. And instead of thinking that we, NVC people, have a monopoly over understanding what empathy means, we have a particular form of how we do empathy. And I want us to be able to do that form and understand how it fits with the general context of empathy. That was a huge amount that I said, and I want to know how much of this was meaningful to you and or supportive or anything you want to say.
I feel very freed up. I feel more trusting of my own instincts, my own intuition around what I'm
getting and what it's calling on me to respond with. So there's a freedom I'm feeling about these distinctions.
I'm delighted. Thank you. So I feel complete with you.
Yeah, I'm complete. Thank you, Mickey.
And I want to open it up for a few more people, you know, to share or ask or whatever, just because I have a sense that I've said so much and it's not my usual habit to say so much at once. So thanks for sparking all of this.
You started talking about empathic presence as the root. I got caught up in listening and didn't really make note of what the branches are or the parts. I know empathic action is probably one of them. Can you name the others?
Empathic presence and there's empathic understanding. Both of these are internal. Empathic reflection, empathic expression, and empathic action. Okay.
When I heard you say the last one, empathic action, I was a little, I don't know, blown away because I remember when I first started studying NVC, one of the rules was empathy before education. And I'm so familiar with myself, my response to people who are in a state of some kind of suffering or pain or great difficulty, of wanting to respond with a suggestion, relieve their suffering. Is this empathic action, does that in that category, or is it more with some kind of question or request beforehand? Would you be interested in hearing what I have to say?
Thank you for the question. I want to say that I am not trying to map this into NVC. I'm just trying to describe the full range of what people do or think about when they think about empathy, whether it's in NVC or not. That's one thing. Another thing is what I mean is a little narrower, is not, you know, like educating or offering suggestions or whatever. It's kind of like responding to your intuitive sense of what the person's needs are. Usually in NVC circles, we call this fix it. Fix it, Jackal, is the term that I've heard used most often. It's kind of like, oh, I'm feeling really uncomfortable, calling my father. And the other person says, do you want me to make the call instead? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that trying to help by going along with what you think the person wants. And I'm not approving or disapproving of it. I want us to know the full range and to have the capacity to choose things based on what our intuitive sense is would most meet needs.
You know, what I'm hearing, the distinction, this is very helpful for me, is that it is in service of the other person if it's empathic, not your own need to fix someone or make things better.
Yes, because sometimes a person can be so overwhelmed with things that having something done for them or giving them support in doing something is the thing that is going to be most helpful. I want to stay open to that. I also know that all of us have discomfort around being present with another person's discomfort. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
And so I want to make sure that, like you said, we're really doing it after having relaxed into full empathic presence and not knee-jerk, let's cut off this discomfort. Thank you for asking that.
Thank you. Helped clarify.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a fully formulated question, but it has something to do with like where the attention is. Think of presence as, you know, the attention is on the other person versus it's on me. And I notice that some people, as they're maybe doing the empathic expression, are maybe going on too much about what it is for them to be experiencing my issue. And when it goes on too long, I feel like this is really about them. Sometimes it's hard to tell, but I can feel it when they're giving me the attention.
Yes. Yes. I'm really glad you're bringing this thing about where is the attention, because that is the key thing for me. I know that I am in a place of real empathy when my attention is on the other person and when I am in service to the other person. It's tricky because it doesn't mean I'm not giving attention to myself. It doesn't mean I'm not relying on my own heart for intuition or that I'm not feeling things. It just means that I'm mobilized outward. And, of course, being in empathic flow with another person is also very nourishing to me. There isn't really a need separation between self and other the way we think. But there is something about the flow of where the attention is going. So I'm grateful to you for bringing that up, too.
I have one more thing that's sort of related to what you just said. For people who tend to give themselves away, as I do sometimes, I'm wondering, you know, where you go with that. Because there's a way that I can give too much attention and too much of my energy
maybe,
and not feel what I'm feeling. It can be delicious, too, to be connected, but there's a way.
Yes. So I can give you a piece of advice that somebody gave me many years ago that was really helpful to me. She said, anytime you question whether you're still in a place to give, if you just question it, you know that it's too much. Am I still available to listen? Anytime you find yourself wondering about that, you can assume that the answer is no. You're done.
Thank you.
Play with it and see if it works. It's very refreshing in the world if you can say to another person something like, I really enjoy being available to you and listening to you, and I want to do that again and again, and I want to make sure that I preserve my energy well so that when I'm with you, I'm really fully with you and not at cost to either one of us. And I think I'm approaching my limit for today. Can we talk again tomorrow?
Sure.
There's nothing in that that says I don't want to listen to you.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I am curious if Mary is by any chance listening, and if you have anything that you'd like to comment, just as fellow trainer.
I have been listening. I really like your distinction between empathic reflection and, I forget what you called the other one.
Empathic expression.
Yes, empathic expression. I guess I don't really have anything to add. But I really do appreciate your distinctions. And also, I do have a little thing to add. And that I really like your distinction between this is NVC's method,
mm-hmm.
but there are lots of methods, lots of ways to be empathic with a person, to receive a person empathically. I really like that reminder.
Thank you. That was exactly the piece that I felt nervous about, having another NVC trainer on the call, and what are they going to think about me being a renegade, which I don't think I am.
No, I don't think at all, Mickey. In fact, in my classes, I teach two kinds of empathy. There's empathy, which is the presence, the empathic presence,
uh-huh.
and then there's the NVC technique, which is reflecting back feelings and needs. Boy, I totally agree that there are lots of ways of being in empathic presence with people.
Thank you. I feel very complete. I keep going to wherever there is any discomfort or vulnerability in me, I want to make the connection right there to either get the feedback and work with it or release and get a reality check. So I appreciate this little exchange. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am wondering if there's anything that anybody else wants to say now before I let you talk with each other in small groups. Any questions or comments before we do that?
Something got triggered for me by this most recent discussion about empathic reflection as being and the NVC approach, and then these other aspects of empathy as sort of other aspects of empathy. And I guess my question is, since we're sort of looking at the principles and sort of the mindset of NVC, when you first started talking about them, it seemed to me that they are part of NVC. So I guess I'm just sort of confused about that particular distinction.
Uh-huh. So I think that the thing with NVC that I would say is I want to be clear. If I'm coming at it from an NVC perspective, I want to be clear when I'm empathizing, when I'm expressing, and when I'm taking action other than empathy or expression. And I want to make sure that I have agreements with the other person about what we're doing. When I'm offering empathic reflection, there, it's almost like a small request that I make implicitly of asking the other person, tell me if my guess is accurate. When I say, are you feeling this because you need this, or anything, you know, less formal, but if I am focusing in this way, I'm essentially asking the other person, would you tell me if my guess resonates for you? That's the little agreement that I have.
Okay.
Anything else, I want to have a clear and explicit request made. So if I want to take action, let's say, on behalf of another person's needs, I want to check with them if they want that action. That would fit it more within the NVC framework. If I just take the action, in some small, subtle way, I'm making a decision for the other person.
Got it. I see what you're saying. Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to express what's going on in me right now in the hope that maybe some other people are having this happen, and I guess I just need some empathy for it myself. For some reason tonight, I'm feeling a little bit uneasy, but not necessarily in a bad way. I'm not even sure what I'm saying right now. But I think I'm looking for simplicity that's not there. And I keep coming back to what we're talking about is intention. There are so many ways to speak and to listen when we hold the intention to connect compassionately with other people and with ourselves.
Bingo.
And, okay, all right, so I'm not as confused as I think.
At least if you're confused, then I am too.
Okay, good, I think. In other words, all of these other things that right now are sort of in a web that's not as clear as I would like it to be, that's something that we're all going to experience. We just hold to that intention, and there are times when we speak when the intention will not be there, and we might not even realize it until we're finished.
Yes.
Then we come back to the intention. Okay,
yes.
That helps.
I want to tell you, and everyone else obviously, a very short story from the Jewish sages of 2,000 years ago. The story is that somebody came to one of the rabbis and said, teach me the Torah on one foot, meaning, you know, when you stand on one foot, it's not something that you can hold for a long time. So teach me the Torah very quickly is basically what this person says. And the response of the rabbi was this. He said, love thy neighbor as yourself, and the rest is commentary. I just love this story. And that came to mind right now because what you said is exactly the same thing. The intention to connect compassionately is what we're talking about right now. Everything else is details about how to do that most skillfully.
Skillfully can change from moment to moment. In other
yes.
words, what that entails.
Yes. And that's why, to loop back to the very beginning, if we create rules, we're going to lose the intuitive heart flow that comes from focusing our intention. If instead we just think of a toolbox and guidelines, then we are in a much better place. Clear?
Thank you, Mickey. That's very clear.
Thanks. So, what I would like you to do in your small groups, I would like to go back to the materials. I'm imagining that all of this happened. This was, in my body, was pretty intensive, what we did so far. So you might want to take a few moments in the beginning to just share with each other where you are right now in reference to all that's happened so far. And then I want you to take a situation that has happened to you or that you make up and have it, at least one person, maybe all of you, but you know my general philosophy. I like to have complete turns is more important to me than having everybody practice. So have one person start with a situation, and everybody in the group helps them walk their way to opening their heart to the presence to the other person and this experience of allowing ourselves to be moved, so that that is what allows whatever guessing or action to come from within an authentic place of connection rather than a mental process of guessing needs. So the first step is to just come back to presence, do whatever you need to bring yourself to presence. You might need to receive empathy yourself, and that's fine. Second step is really do the heart opening to kind of like take in the impact of what the other person is saying. And then choose how you want to respond based on that full connection. Do you want to go to a place of empathic reflection? Do you want to go to a place of empathic expression? Whatever it is that you want to do, you do it. And that's round one. And then the other person says something else again in the role play, and you go through that same experience again. Let's model it. Is anybody willing to volunteer? We can do it for a moment before you do it in small groups. Anybody willing to volunteer to do a piece of work? Thank you, Laurel. And Mike, who is also volunteering, will be your other person. So what is your situation in which you want to cultivate your capacity for empathy in flow?
I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, and he was explaining ways in which he wanted to help his peers and his classmates. One of those ways was by attending class, because some of them had expressed that they were intimidated by him, and others were like by...
Laurel, can you encapsulate all this into a line that Mike can say?
For sure. Mike, you could say something along the lines of, I think it's better for everyone that I just don't go to class.
Great, that's good enough. So can you get into that character, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, so you just say it, and then I will work with Laurel.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it's better I don't go to class.
Okay, so now, Laurel, the first step is, can you bring yourself to presence, to just be with that?
It feels hard right now.
What happens inside of you that interferes?
Because, I have a stroke in putting other people before himself.
Okay, so take a moment to hang out inside you with your reaction, just to receive your reaction and settle into it for a moment so that you can step out of it and be with him. That's what I mean by presence. Just take yourself into him while being tender with your own reaction that makes it hard.
Yeah, I think I can do that.
Great. Now, the second thing is you heard what he said. See if you can not only just be present, but open your heart, rip your heart open to be affected by the gestalt of whatever that experience is that would lead somebody to say this. Take it in. He's a human being who is going through something.
I can definitely feel the difference in, even though he's not here, I can feel the difference in how present I am with what's going on for him.
Wonderful. Now choose how you want to respond to Mike from within that place. Not from within the worry.
Okay.
You'll come to that later.
I think I would choose empathic reflection.
Try it out, and then Mike will respond, and then that would be round one, and you can do that again. Try out your response.
It sounds like this is really hard for you, and that you have a lot of care for the people around you.
Yeah. I just don't want to hurt anybody, you know.
Great. So that's the end. And now you do it, you start over and do the same thing again. You look at if you can stay present, open your heart, choose what you're going to say, and stay like this until you have a sense of completion. I'm not saying let's do that now. I just wanted to demonstrate it for the groups.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mickey. And thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Anything you need to do, Laurel, to bring yourself back to this moment?
I feel complete.
Thank you. And Mike, is there anything you want to say by way of having been that person that you think would be useful for Laurel and others to hear? How was it to hear her reflection? Did it feel good as that character? did it give you a sense that she was with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So let's get started in the groups. And there was one other question.
This is a question about the process that we're going to be going through to do this, and I'm asking the question based on the work you just did.
Yes.
If in the process of, like, listening to someone, what gets in the way is, like, feelings, you know, feelings of anger or annoyance or some other thing, you know, that's blocking sort of my being able to empathize.
Yes.
What you did in the exercise just now was you sort of asked the person to think of this other person as a human being. And
no, that was step two. That was step two. It's going to be hard for you to do that before you brought yourself to presence. The first thing that I asked Laurel to do was to receive her own reaction tenderly. That was the first thing. So if you have anger or annoyance or anything else that interferes, the first task is for you to be present with your own reaction, enough to settle it inside yourself and come to full presence. Does that make sense, Sharon?
Well, I just wondered, sometimes that reaction that we're having needs to be worked a bit.
Then in that case, you have a third person in your group, and you can ask for empathy for yourself for a bit, only with the intention of coming to presence, not with the intention of processing your reaction and being heard. It's a very subtle distinction.
I think I get it, though. I think I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and I want all of us to grow in our capacity to do this, because otherwise we all of us have so much to heal that if we always have to do all this work first before we can make ourselves present for something else, we're not going to get fast enough to a place of being available to the world. And that's what I want us to be, is available to the world, because we are investing in our resources at a time that is very necessary for there to be more and more people who can be present. So I want us to get really efficient in receiving support so that we can be available and present.
I hear you. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so in terms of the group, I'd like the group to go on for 15 minutes. Hello and welcome back, everyone. I get a sense that there was a lot of richness in what you did, and I would like to use the rest of our time together to kind of like harvest and dig deeper into what you learned in this practice, what questions you have, who needs more support, maybe doing another one of those live with everyone. We'll see. Let's open it up for however you want to participate.
I just wanted to share something that just happened where I had to kind of sit in the other person's pain, and it was just so uncomfortable for me. I really just felt tongue-tied, and the person I was working with, Paul, said, well, you don't have to fill the space. And I just love that idea of like just not having to find any words. And I just kind of made a sound or...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like that. It just felt good.
It's what I'm getting is it's kind of like experimenting with what's your truthful way of expressing your empathic presence.
Yeah, it just cut through all the stuff. Because there is this urgency about filling the space. What am I going to say? How do I deal with this? Let go.
Yes. I'm glad you had that experience. And can I probe another piece? What was uncomfortable? Why was it uncomfortable to sit with another person's pain?
It's a family member, and it's very similar to my own. Something I don't want either of us to have to feel ever. I just know too much kind of about them, so it just feels really big.
Uh-huh. So I want to just kind of like explore around the edges of the idea that pain is something to avoid. That
mm-hmm.
overall idea that floats around in the culture around us, that pain is bad. I want to replace it, not with the idea that pain is good. I want to replace it with the idea that pain happens and it's not harmful. What's harmful is to be alone with our experience, not the experience itself.
Yeah.
It can be harmful. You know, if you look even at things like childhood trauma and abuse, you would think that's an awful thing, you know. We all think that. Then there are studies that were done to look at those people who have suffered abuse and grew up to have, you know, whatever it is that somebody calls functional life or to be well-adjusted. All these terms mean something very particular to people that I don't know what it means. However, I would at least understand from that that they are able to carry their own within the world in some way, participate in the world instead of being unable to participate, which is so many people who have had serious child abuse find themselves in that situation. So they did studies to look at what's the difference, what made it possible for these people. And the factor that most stands out is the people who've had someone to go to that they could speak with and could understand them. That is the key factor that made it possible for people to survive what happened to them. That is a very powerful piece of information for me. Do you see where I'm going with it?
Yeah, I think, but just how to let someone know that they're not alone.
Exactly. Because the key thing about pain is to be able to digest and metabolize it. And if we go there's nothing that happened, or you're going to be okay, or whatever, we're not giving the system that has experienced something the space to be with it, digest it, metabolize it, learn from it, grow from it, continue with life with all those experiences integrated. Do you see what I mean?
Well, it's interesting because it's so close to what happened to both of us that people didn't trust that we could be with our pain. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like being able to put the stuff that was in my heart, you know, into two separate sections and just kind of push my stuff aside so I could feel free to give empathy to the person.
Yeah.
It was freeing. If I felt free, whereas before it was in the way.
Yeah. It is freeing. I like that you said it like this, because what I find within myself is that when I'm making it from a place of that kind of choice, it doesn't feel like a sacrifice or giving up on myself. It feels like I grow in capacity. I'm a bigger person in those moments. I can do something that I didn't think I could do. And it doesn't mean giving up or stuffing or suppressing. It means putting it aside and then coming back to it later.
This is the first time I've really consciously done this, and it feels good.
Ah, welcome. I'm glad. Remember this, because now that you've had this experience, nobody can take it away from you. Thanks.
I have some feedback about the process. I wanted to share something along the lines of what was just said, and I was very intrigued by this whole idea that, you know, sort of speed empathy for yourself to be able to honor what you're going through that might be getting in the way of empathizing with the other person. Honor that, but then move quickly into this other. My teammates helped me a great deal with this, so I really got a lot out of it.
Wonderful. I'm so happy, because I want to loop back, connect to what Mike said. Learning to recognize empathic presence as power, choice, power, capacity, rather than, you know, I give up on myself and I do this other thing. It's just such a different frame. It becomes incredibly empowering to see that I don't have to be limited by my reactivity. Does that sound appealing?
Very.
I have a sense that there's more percolating in you, and I would love to hear, if that's true, I'd like to hear the rest of it.
Yeah, I want to be in that place. You know, the place of being in choice and power and capacity, and I kind of didn't know how, and I think I was emphasizing other things, like what was getting in the way of my being able to empathize with certain people, or I got triggered and whatever. I was spending a lot of time with that through things that I've learned in NBC, but this is just putting the whole picture together of, oh, this is how I could be in this place, and not feeling as though I'm giving something up or that yes. I'm sacrificing myself in an unhealthy way.
Exactly. Because the key thing is the reason why we want to keep to do all the processing of all the stuff that is in us is because we don't trust that otherwise we will honor ourselves. If, however, we create kind of almost like an internal container for our own experience that we can rest in, that is a way of honoring ourselves. And then when we know that we honor ourselves, we free up the energy to do what we want. Okay. Thank you.
I had an aha moment, and that was if you can change gears right in the middle several times if something isn't working for connection.
Yes. Yes.
And go on in another direction. And that can be very freeing.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say, all of you, this has been a rich experience for me in teaching, because I have a sense of really co-creating something with all of you, like we are expanding the horizon together in some way, and I feel very met in the questions and responses. That's really delicious. All right.
You mentioned working with another situation, and I have something I'd like to work with.
So you want to do some more of the practice?
If that works for you, yeah. Yeah.
Works very well for me. Okay, here's how I want to frame it. Playing the other person and playing it for real is an exercise in empathy. Here's how. You become another person and you feel in your body what it's like to be that other person. In that way, you diminish the distance between you and a particular form of being human, and you become more empathic and compassionate overall. Anybody wants to have that opportunity for a few minutes? First come, first serve. So, Charlene, you're on. Who is Charlene?
Charlene, about my husband.
Okay. Charlene, you're a husband. What is this dear husband going to say that's going to be hard for you to be empathic with?
He is unsure about who to believe with two people who he really thinks he should be able to trust.
And they're saying different things, and he doesn't know which one of them to believe. Okay,
exactly.
Charlene, can you feel into this experience and just be that?
Yes.
Okay, so you're the husband. Just say the line.
I'm just unsure who to believe right now.
Is this good enough? Does this trigger you well enough?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Not even just thinking about this, so my heart's going boom, 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 boom.
Okay, so remember the first step is bring yourself to presence. And if there is a lot of reaction, bring tenderness to that. And it might be just breathing, just reminding yourself that you are human, that you have responses and reactions, and right now you want to be present for him.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. That was step one. Step two is open your heart to let his words reverberate, to let his dilemma, his challenge, his stress, whatever it is, just let yourself be affected by that, by what that would be like. This is the piece that takes us out of the mental, thinking about what the words should be. Just allow your heart to be affected by this experience. Let me know when you're ready.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I'm just imagining myself, if I was him, I'm taking two completely different people who I both think that I should be able to completely trust, and imagining there's a conflict of what they're saying.
Yeah. That's usually the surest way, is to try to imagine it. If you can imagine it, then you can have some inkling as to what his experience is. And why am I saying some inkling? Because he's not you. So the way that experience is for him is not necessarily the way that it would be for you. But it gives you some inkling and it orients your heart towards understanding him. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. So now, take a couple of breaths and let words come out of your mouth in response to him.
I think I can see that you're really unsure and that that's giving you a lot of pain. The uncertainty of not knowing, that could be really overwhelming.
So just relate to him. You're kind of like talking about it. I want you to link back to him, connect to him, finish with connecting in some way. Because you've been talking about you, I think that this is then, you know, maybe check in with him, like, you know, like, did I get it? Is this what you wanted me to understand? Some way of linking back.
So I'm guessing that just not knowing or not being able to be clear or not being able, not knowing that you can trust is causing you a lot of pain. And am I right? Is that how you're feeling?
That would be a lot of pain. Yeah, there is a lot of pain. So I want to trust both of you.
Yeah.
So, Charlene, what did this feel like? Did you have a sense of being connected with?
A sense of being understood, yeah.
Thank you. How was it for you?
It's very good to be able to do this.
So I want to ask you one more thing, which is your words felt hesitant. So I'm wondering if you were still doing some kind of editing inside.
It could be partly because I'm a little bit nervous being on the phone and I'm, you know, being heard by a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
Concerned about how everyone's reacting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to say before we close this?
No, thanks very much.
Uh-huh. Thank you for jumping in. And Charlene, anything you want to say, any insight that you had as the husband that you think would be useful to share?
There was no attack going on. It was really, it was connecting. It was very, like you said about being heard, all the walls were down. Mm-hmm. It was a very vulnerable place. A good vulnerable place, a connecting one.
Yeah. Good. Wonderful. I'm delighted to hear this. And I am tracking that there was a question that David put on the table, which is not directly about empathy. However, I would like to address it unless there is anything more about the topic of empathy that anybody wants to check in with me about before I do that. Okay, I'm impressed with myself for not having forgotten. David, are you still up for that?
Thank you. Sure.
Okay, so the situation is your child is holding on to something, an electronic gadget, and it is your vast preference that they not do it. Can you tell me why you don't want them to do it?
It's bedtime on a school night.
Okay, so that still doesn't tell me why you want them not to do it. So I'm trying to get you to step out of external rules and into where is the choice for you and why are you making that choice?
There's a very long history of lateness to school, lateness getting up, and lateness going to bed. My child is at my home as an experiment because he's usually at his mother's home because he responds to her and does not respond to my rules.
Okay, so it's a very complex situation. You want to create a situation in which he will go to bed at the time that you want him to go to bed and wake up in the morning at the time that you want him to wake up in the morning and go to school.
Right.
And that's because you would like him to stay at your place more often?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you see how much different that is from saying it's not okay? How old is the child?
16.
Does the child want to be at your place?
Yes.
Okay. So what I would do is I would have a conversation with him where I would say, not in that moment of bedtime, at another moment, where I would say, I want to bring my dilemma to you. Both of us want you to stay here. And we need to find a way to work it out so that you get to school on time. I want your help in coming up with a system that will work for both of us. Completely different conversation. Do you see?
Yes, that makes sense. Although the not okay was not only in response to a failure to turn off the gadget, it was in response to him saying to me loudly, "Get out of my face."
Well, that is already, you know, downstream from you are trying to tell him what to do instead of working it out with him. And he's basically, when he says, "Get out of my face," he's basically telling you, "I want my autonomy."
Right. You can't tell me what to do. You can't set rules for your household.
That's your interpretation. What he's saying is, "I want to have choice." Just hear that. And he can have choice if the two of you participate together in making the rules together. If you're deciding the rules and he just has to follow them, you're going to be in a power struggle with him, guaranteed. If you invite him into partnership to solve the problem of both of you wanting him to stay at your place more often, and the reality of him not getting to school on time as a result is not tenable and would result in that not happening as often as you both like, then he's a partner to you.
That makes sense. But in the moment when someone in my house speaks that way to me, I feel a strong need to protect myself and to...
Okay, then train yourself...
respond immediately.
Train yourself, instead of saying, "That's not okay," to at least say, "That's not okay by me. I don't like this. I'm not going to put up with it. I, rather than it." Because that's the truth. There is nothing about it that is not okay in any kind of sense that comes from outside of you. It's only not okay because you don't like it. Then take ownership of that. Those are the two pieces that seem important.
The problem that I posed myself before the class was, here's a case where it's very difficult to have my heart open when, as a parent, the obligation of a parent in parenting is to respond to this kind of thought immediately.
That's a much bigger conversation in terms of parenting, because as soon as you talk about obligation, you're already outside of what are my needs, what are his needs. And that's beyond... I was kind of like including a bubble in it. This is a much, much longer conversation than we can have in this moment.
Okay. All right.
Maybe
I'm seeing the possibility of bringing empathy to the immediate situation that I was in.
How about if we leave it at this way? Where you are right now, you don't know how to bring empathy to that situation. With more skill and more practice, people do. People turn around situations like this using empathy. To say that's not okay.
That would be great.
Yeah, to say that's not okay is an escalation. Your attempt to protect escalates the situation. Just think about that. And maybe we'll touch base on it again next week and we'll see how that unfolds. Thank you. Now I'd like to shift focus to just the closing, and I like to hear from two or three people just a quick one-liner. What are you walking away from our time together with that you're going to focus on this week that touched you, that was meaningful?
My one-liner: life is not a practice group.
Thank you. Okay.
I can put this, everything that I have inside of me, into a container and turn my full attention to understanding your experience.
Thank you.
I love the way you define empathic expression as expression of me in the service of you.
Thank you.
You mentioned about pain. The pain itself wasn't necessarily harmful, but it was being alone with the pain.
Thank you.
Everything we do is just about trying to get on the internet.
Thank you. Talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.